Howdy, friends. Thanks for joining me on another podcast today. I'm your host and guide, Lance Howard. Today's coaching conversation is with Corey. In the first few minutes of our conversation, Corey asked me about my story. So the first few minutes, you hear me on a rant about my story and overcoming what it means for me to be a wholehearted leader on this journey. We dive into growth, maturation, burnout, what it means to be a man on the spiritual journey, pursuing meaningful work, and how do we do that in a way that honors our craft and honors God at the same time, and to do that and get back on track, especially when life throws us an obstacle. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Blessings and peace to you on your journey. But no, like I'll share just a, you know, nugget with myself that could be helpful, because like, right, there's something about, as men, we go on this pursuit of pursuing whatever vocation and work that we perceive is meaningful, right? And there's allures and traps in that, because oftentimes we get successful if you do your craft and you do it really well, and then it's like, oh, this is great. So kind of similar to yourself, I found myself I climbed kind of sounds silly to say it in the pastoral sense in the church world, you know, youth pastor. Then I was like, oh, I'm gonna do the executive ministry role. Very similar stories to what you just shared. Just ended up like really just a fragment of a person. I was like, man, I don't even know what's going on. Young family, blowing and going and having a great time. But I looked up one day and I'm like, one, I'm in an unhealthy environment. Two, I've become unhealthy and I don't even know who I am. Which kind of led to what you said, like burnout of like, ultimately it led me on an 18-month wilderness journey. This was 6 years ago now at this point. And I think it's really that process in a man's life that has me trying to understand, one, my story, and as I serve other people, like I think God is trying to take all these layers and just say, like, more and more dependence and union with Him is what ultimately He desires, like, right? And so if that is true, then how do we pursue meaningful work, you know, back to the garden, and how do we do that in a way that honors our wife, honors our family, without going insane in this world? So that's what I would say resonates, because it, right, I think all of our stories are very similar. You know, there's a crux of like, God is pursuing our heart, and are we willing to give that over to Him?
Wow. Amen. I love what you said about, you know, you said something like climbing the ladder or something metaphorically like that, and then almost corrected yourself as if it sounds ironic or somehow not pastoral, like to be in one of those roles and to want to lead more and find yourself ascending. And I just want to say I appreciate you acknowledging that one can do that and find oneself at a place of utter darkness. And I guess I'm also curious, was your 18-month wilderness experience a literal one? Like, did you go off into the wilderness, or are you just talking metaphorically, like biblically?
I went on many long walks, 2 and 3 hours, but okay. No, the wilderness story was, you know, we've got a family of four girls, wife at that point, you know, 14 years of marriage, getting close to 20 now this year. But it was 18 months of the check is in the mail, both literally and metaphorically. Like I thought 6 years ago, like I was ready for this whole coaching endeavor. I was like, my perception 10, 12 years ago was like, oh, I want to do what John Maxwell and John Eldridge does, but kind of intersect that somehow. Like I clearly remember communicating that to somebody in 2010. But I didn't really understood what that meant. Like I think because it's that dying to yourself. And so that 18-month process, literally numerous tears, numerous yelling at God, fighting with God, wrestling with God, like this whole identity thing, the shame, is just very weird experience. Especially as a what you may know as like the good guy, the nice guy, you kind of hold things together and you're like, oh, who am I when I can't hold things together and things don't work out just because I follow God. And I think that's the reality of life is like those of us that are trying to pursue God, it's like, who are we when things don't really work out the way that we perceive them to be? So
I don't know what your experience with Catholicism is, and I'm not even sure it doesn't matter at all because everything you just spoke to me speaks directly to my heart. But I want to share that for me, in that separation, the climb, and then to stick with the ladder metaphor, like just completely falling backwards off the ladder. And I phoned a Jesuit priest who had been a mentor to me for ever since I was a teenager, and found myself in one of many conversations where I was in tears, let alone all the tears that I shed in front of my wife and on the floor in this room I'm talking to you from, many rooms in this house. And the thing, it's, I'm just, I just looked away from the camera and there's a picture of this man I'm talking about staring at me on my bulletin board across the room. I forgot he was there. And so shout out to Chris. And unfortunately, and I just know his heart was absolutely in the right place when I called him that day and expressed my grief about everything that was happening and how angry I was with God, among other things. His response was, "Don't be angry with God." And I really internalized that. I didn't know it at the time, but it was really shame inducing. Like I didn't have permission to be angry with God. And theologically, I don't know what all the what all the teachings are on that. I just know it was an emotion that I was going through, and now I recognize that what would have been most helpful would have been to hear a man of God say to me, "It's okay," and I've been angry with God before too. And so it's really helpful for me to hear you share that. And I do wish that that was something in my faith tradition that was talked about more openly, and that these crises that will likely face us are, they're almost predictable, and that there are ways to approach them that might include having a period of time where you're angry with God, and that's okay.
I think he can handle it.
Yeah. Never heard that before. Yeah.
Well, man, Corey, I'm pumped to connect with you. I'm not sure where this conversation's going at this point.
Yeah.
Highly intrigued, and we could chase a lot of different rabbits. I'm a huge fan of Richard Rohr and a lot of his writings. I don't know if you're familiar with some of his, bringing up the Catholic faith and tradition. And he has some profound, helpful ways to think about the masculine journey that have resonated with me. What would be meaningful for you today, just in this space, in this time, that would make this
Well,
conversation?
I honest to God, Lance, like I'd like to just follow my heart and say there are some things you've written that I'd just like to know more about and share some of myself as it relates to a couple of those things. And then I have a feeling we'll probably get pretty quickly to close and say, well, now where do we go from here again? And that's okay with me, but it really would be helpful for me to not, you know, I know I need help discerning what my next professional, you know, what that looks like. But I also think there are some other things that are, you know, one of the gifts of this, of these last few years is, and I think you kind of alluded to this, is how it puts the job and the professional thing in perspective and moves other things to the fore, like that relationship with God. And another one is my relationship with my wife. And so I think I do want to talk about that, but I think to get there, and you know, maybe we won't get there, I don't know, but on my heart right now, the more interesting and important thing, you wrote about it and you mentioned it here just a few minutes ago. And that's just the idea of like being this nice guy. And I just want to say for me that I kind of wore that as a way of really moving through the world. That was my primary MO was to please people. And you know, a little sidebar on that is I'll never forget, and this has so much, it's such a different meaning now than it did 5 years ago when it happened, but we did this comprehensive survey of our school community, parents and faculty and students and yada yada yada. And one of the questions was like razor sharp clear in terms of who it was about, and it was about me and my leadership. And if I was running for president of the United States of America, no one could touch me with the kind of approval ratings that I had. And I remember thinking, Jesus, this is wow, that's really super cool. And I look back on it now and I go, oh my God, that's just a there was the crack. I mean, that was the primary crack that someone could have seen, and which I hung my hat on, and ultimately I think was a major source of my burnout, was just running all over the place, literally and emotionally, but really both. Like, and I'm an introvert by nature, and so a lot of this was just really forced extroversion. And so I just found it that was a real connecting point with some of what you'd written, and you said it again a few moments ago. And so I just wanted to hone in on that and see if you wanted to say any more about what you recognize about that role, that persona, how you came to understand it and how you've dealt with it.
I'm still in progress, so I'll make that very
Okay.
clear. But right, being aware of it is just even half the battle, in and of itself. And I think in both of our stories, identifying our own nice guy-ness per se was probably at the root of what was going on. Right. Is the inability really to create clear boundaries and not have the approval of everyone. You know, I remember in a conversation of, I've just got all these plates spinning, and I felt important because I was doing them, versus this common phrase I use, and I picked it up from somebody else. It's like, well, what is mine to do? That I'm uniquely gifted for, qualified for, and called to do. And I'm going to do that. And then I've got to figure out letting go of everything else, which requires a high level of just being able to say no, you know, which is very, very difficult. A lot of, man, this, so many guys that I'm serving right now, probably because of the LinkedIn post. It's very similar, right? You're successful on the outside. You got the approval of everybody. You've climbed whatever ladder you're climbing, but you just feel still shallow, because you're not. Even this morning, I was with a client this morning. I was like, it feels selfish when you begin to take up more space in the world. When you start to pursue your desires, wants, and needs and make those known, it feels at odds because a lot of times it's the first time that we've ever had to do that. And the last thing I would say, some of it's been a lot of reading, a lot of Dr. Robert Glover's work over the last decade that has really been super insightful. But then, two, understanding my own Enneagram. I don't know if you're familiar with Enneagram. So I'm an Enneagram 9, which is I can bring everybody to the table, facilitate, get everybody going in the same direction, negotiate conflict. But when that means that I have to do it, I'm conflict avoidant. Meaning that I kind of fear, like, well, there's this false story in my head that I'm going to lose these relationships if I take up more space, if I make my desires, wants, and needs known. And that comes from my anchored in story of childhood, of protecting myself, the perception of this is how I get safety. And then you realize, like, oh, this is really doing more damage in the long run because the people in the room don't know what I'm thinking. And unless I'm tell them what I'm thinking, then we're all just walking on eggshells trying to guess, just get it out on the table, So I don't know what resonates with you in that, but I'd be curious to just ask, like, when did you first learn this behavior or style of operating?
Well, I want to answer that question. Maybe it'll come up as I'm saying this. I just want to tell you what immediately comes to my heart as I listen to you. And here it is. Like I thought maybe this would find us back talking about my marriage, and here it is, right in front of me. It's not the exact answer to your question, but it is. I think it could lead us there. The moment I heard and felt the voice that was asking for something was that I remember clearly. I remember I was in our basement. I remember exactly where I was. I remember exactly what I was doing. And it was I was asking my wife for our relationship to take on new depth and what I wanted from our marriage and what I wanted from our relationship. And what I remember from that conversation was how powerful I felt. And I was actually a little afraid because I wasn't sure if I was all of a sudden being like this ogre and acting out because of all the stuff I was going through. But in the moment, and then probably more importantly, after the moment, for quite some time for me, I kept coming back to that and going, wow, what about that is sticking with me? And I think part of it was, if not all of it was, I just named something out loud that I'm missing and that I really want. And it was with somebody I really, really love. So I don't it doesn't come to mind just yet when I started realizing the nice guy game was being played. Should anybody watch this, I'm sure there are plenty of people. If I had 1,000 people who knew me watching this, there are probably 500 people who'd raise their hand and say, "You're not a nice, what, who would ever thought you were a nice guy?" So I don't, I mean, but in my head, that was what I was doing, and the numbers would show, at least on that one survey. But man, that conversation, and it wasn't very much of a conversation, Lance. It was kind of a monologue. I felt 10 feet tall. And yeah, I felt a little shame and guilt and other stuff that made it confusing, but it stuck in there as Not only did I name what I want more of, but now I have something I also want more of, which is that feeling that I had, which was, this is what I want from life. And I don't really want to settle for less than that.
It's like you felt like Superman in the room, like right, standing up with your chest, and it's like, and there's a sense of freedom in it, and it's weird, right? Because I think our culture is not doing anything helpful right now with masculinity. Let's just be honest. So we have this idea that the macho jerk looks this way, and then we're like, I don't want that, right? But then you have the wimpy kid over here on the playground, you know, manipulating everybody, and it's like, well, I'm not that. And so we're dancing between like, well, what am I? You know, and so many of us, you know, I love both my fathers deeply, biological and my stepfather, but even for them, you know, learning where I interpreted some of these messages, you know, like I didn't see it really modeled real well of them taking up more space, them going after their dreams, goals, desires. It's not that they weren't, but I think we just have new opportunities to step into this place and grow ourselves and our families, and it's very empowering when that happens. Very empowering.
Yeah, and I want to say something about the messiness of the culture that we're immersed in. Plenty of people have had plenty to say about that. I just want to offer one, additional perspective, and that was the school that I love so dearly, where our second boy will graduate from this spring. PS, talk about something that has made all of this more difficult is that I had one son in the school when the shit hit the fan, and another one entering just in time to enjoy four more years of all of that kind of being in my face. But as leader of that school for about 4 to 5 years myself, I felt it was absolutely necessary, to use those two kind of images that you shared. The jock bully archetype, if you want to call it, I mean, whatever that stereotype, whatever it is, in the context of an all boys religious school, I felt like we had swung too far in that direction, and it was time to address some of that. And so, I now look back and and I regret that I didn't have a more nuanced understanding, and also how caught up I got in, some of that dichotomy and that black and white thinking. But I just felt like I needed to say something about, lived experience of here I was probably, at least for some, I mean, there's 600 kids in the school, and so at least, I don't know, two of those kids are probably looking at me as a role model, or whatever. And so I felt it was really important to try to embody and personify that. And I look back now, and I think, boy, would I like to go back and do that again, knowing what I know now, both about the culture and where it was going, and what I know about myself now and what I needed. Because to your point, part of what I've needed my whole life is good, strong male role models who, among other things, could express an emotion. Because you talk about the Enneagram, and I'm struggling. I think I'm a two. I should know this, but I've just forgotten. I used to teach when I taught before I was an administrator. I used to share the Myers-Briggs, and I don't know if you're familiar with that one, but I'm an INFP, which is, it's like the least masculine male on the planet. It's the personality types. It's the one that has all the stereotypically feminine attributes. And so, having grown up with just a real sensitivity and largely surrounded by my mom's one of nine, and seven of those siblings of hers are brothers. Those guys are blue collar to the core. And so all of that emotion and everything else, man, did I do a number on that. And so I just, I think that the opportunity to be able to have this conversation with you, and that the gift of having gotten to live long enough to see some of this stuff and now say, okay, like, oh, I get it now. And maybe to be able to do something about it. That's, I mean, really, like, that's why I wanted to talk to you, because, like, hey, here's somebody who seems to have elements of his journey which really resonate. What can I learn from him? What can I share? And particularly because you're unafraid of talking about God. And I'm going to say one more thing and I'll stop talking for this portion of our conversation. But I mentioned something about my faith probably 2 or 3 months ago in one of my posts. And my brother called me. And when my brother calls me, Lance, I answer the phone because it happens once every couple of years. And he just wanted me to know that he didn't think it was a good idea for me to, talk about my faith in the public forum, and that it could cost me opportunities and whatnot. And I'm just like, wow. Yeah. So those are some of the reasons that I feel very blessed to be in front of you. And I'm gonna hit the pause button.
Well, thank you. I'm honored that you took a risk to show up today, and I'm having a great time talking. And I mentioned just even that idea that we have to hide in a private, personal, public LinkedIn, like, right? Like when those feelings start to resonate, it's like, oh, I need to chase that down, because I need to be integrated, or what I call wholehearted, in all domains of life, right? I'll mention this, and I'll ask a question: is that when you do begin to ask for what you want, and you pursue this large vision, this dream that you feel like, is upon your life, I have noticed: am I wanting this to validate myself? Or am I really pursuing this because it's a deeper vision, right? And I think how I'm currently trying to separate the two is that I have to be mindful of that pursuing my wife often can show up as insecurity if I'm not careful of needing her validation or wanting her validation, right? Versus on the flip side of when I'm aware of like trying to pursue this larger vision. I'm mindful of about 12 months ago exactly. I pursued this mentor in our community. By my standards, incredibly successful, runs a fabulous business, making killer money, and just godly man. Just in our community, he is known as just a righteous, outstanding man's man, right? Type of deal. And I had opportunity to meet him, and within the first conversation, I was like, "Hey, this may be weird or awkward, but I want to do lunch. And I've heard a lot of great things about you. Would you be willing to do lunch with me?" Lunch led to me asking, like, "Hey, I really like you. Would you be willing to mentor me? And can we do this every other week?" And at the time, that felt like a large risk and an ask, because I'm like, one, who am I? Two, he's got an exorbitant amount of things on his plate. But like when we show up and we believe in our potential that God has put in our life, it's like we start to ask in not a needy way, but in a very, very much a meaningful way. So what do you think for you as you're in this transitional season? What is it that you want, and possibly how is this helping or inhibiting you from going after it?
Just to clarify, when you say, how is this helping?
This meaning the nice guy, the pleasing, the not sure if I can take up more space in the world.
Right on. I got tears in my eyes when you're sharing that story about, pursuing your mentor, because it resonates again. Like that's squarely where I am. It feels really weird to be 52 years old and to be thinking about a mentor. I feel like I should be a mentor. And yet there's somebody on my radar right now he's about 75 years old, and he looks like he's got the energy of a 40, year old man. And most of his career has been in education. He just loves kids, and he's totally inspiring. And I'm kind of, dancing around. I actually just sent him a text message this morning. I had my first breakfast with him about a month or two ago. And so again, thank you for sharing that, because it totally resonates. And your question's a freaking great question. And the first thing that comes to my heart is an image of me apologizing as I ask for that, and doing it in a way that's sheepish, or makes it easier for me allegedly to hear no. And it almost even sets it up for it to be a no, because that's how I used to show up, was, hey, I don't want to impose on you, and this is probably way too much to ask, and all this other stuff. And I could see, as I look back, I think there were people whose faces I can kind of imagine right now, who were already starting to show me that they were tired of that act, like that they wanted something more and needed something more from me. And so I want to be done with that. I want to be done with that. And at the same time, another thing you said a few moments ago, and it's slightly in a different context, about your wife and pursuing your wife, is it's a similar sort of a thing as this mentoring thing, is how do I check which person is showing up there? Is it the insecure one? Because if the insecure one is showing up to ask for that mentor opportunity, and he's got a slightly more nuanced, or he's slightly more refined in his less grovelly, needy ask, then so what? I mean, that's even worse. So I'm getting better at the charade. So I would like to leave that conversation with that mentor feeling like I did when I left that conversation with my wife, whether the answer is yes or no, because my wife didn't say, oh, I've always wanted you to, to say something like that. Damn it. Why didn't you man up long ago and tell me how you really, no, that's not what happened. And so similarly, being less concerned about whether the mentor prospect said no or let me think about it, and just showing up, being more concerned about me showing up and making a case for that authentic self, that's what I want more of. And I think all this obsessing that I do about, well, what's the job and what's the job description, I really do think it'll show up when that person I just described shows up.
And isn't it weird how like perfection is like paralyzing?
What an irony.
We tinker around with, oh, the job's got to look this way, and it's, I'll change my headline, and I'm only speaking from my own experience. And it's like there's a difference between excellence and perfection. And it's like, okay, when I feel that anxiety, I'm pursuing perfection. What there's a shift in you just a few moments ago, just kind of as you had those sense of emotions. What do you think that shift is saying to you, and how does that help you begin to move forward?
Well, I think the shift, not to go way out there as we're wrapping up, but it is the first thing again that comes to my heart, is I think it's saying something about alignment with something, some power beyond myself. You said something several moments ago about a self-serving aspect of, and I can't remember what the context was, but it comes back to my mind as I'm trying to answer your question, and something like, I think that strength that I feel in asking for what I really want, well, it's in line with like what's in the Gospels, you know? So maybe it's indicative of this is who you are called to be. I mean, this is what being a child of God is like. That's to me. On my walk this morning, that those words just were like so at the top of my mind, at the front of my mind, this idea of just every human creature walking this earth is a child of God, and me too. And so maybe what those moments that I'm getting a taste of where I feel that strength is saying something about an alignment with something much greater than myself, and that wanting more of that, I think this goes all the way back to where you started this conversation. Like, that's what God wants for us. So yeah, asking for more of it, that's not something I've been trained to do. Boy, you talk about something that's not that's not in the repertoire of most Catholics and most people in my family, man. You be happy for what you got, and yeah, take care of it. Yeah.
This is I don't like absolutes, but I don't think it's true for many of us Catholic, in the Christian faith world. We're cloaked in this religious veil and show up and do the dutiful thing versus God is really just chasing our heart over and over. And you mentioned the Gospels, which reminds me of like Mark 10, that Jesus asked the blind man, like, what do you want? Like, right? And he says, ask, seek, and knock. I'm like, I'm gonna open the door, another part that I absolutely love is that if you ask your father for bread, is he gonna give you a stone?
Nate, yeah.
So why do I keep hiding? Like, right? Because the world needs us to show up like a city on a hill, without a doubt. I'm gonna kind of circle here and land the plane and ask a question. Dan Sullivan wrote 10x is easier than 2x, and I read it just a few weekends ago. And he writes about basically since the 1980s, unapologetically, he's been journaling every single morning. Just what does he want? Whether it's for that day, that week, the month, the year, like just trying to like, and I had never put that together, like unapologetically journaling about what he wants. And so I've been practicing that, and it's starting to shift things in me in new ways as well. So if that is true, what would you leave here with just saying, you know what, this is what I'm going to be curious about, and I'm unapologetically going to start to want and ask for these two, three things that are coming to mind right now.
Once again, like right off the bat, was it's really clear to me. I've got a daughter who's home today, sick with COVID, and she's the first image that came to my mind is I just want as strong a relationship with her as I can possibly have. And I know I'm talking to a guy with four daughters, right? And that's at the top of the list. And it goes for my two boys as well. That relationship that I asked for with my wife, I want that profoundly. I'm not going to worry about the order here. And I've said it out loud, Lance. Like, yeah, I've declared it to God out loud a couple times in the last week or so. And it's just something along the lines of, there was a lacrosse coach at that school where I worked who predated my tenure. He died tragically young, most crowded funeral I've ever seen. And one of the eulogies, this person talked about this coach, and he would throw up his arms and proclaim with all sincerity, "Use me, Lord. Use me, Lord." And it just stuck with people. And that would be the other thing, is just some clarity about how I can be a better instrument. Because with the days I have left, the gift of recognizing the beauty and all the ugliness of the thing that I thought was so horrible and so god-awful, 4 years ago, there's this phrase in the Jesuit tradition. It's abbreviated AMDG, the letters AMDG. It's Latin for ad maiorem Dei gloriam, which translates as for the greater glory of God. And it's from Saint Ignatius, the founder of the Jesuits, and it's his kind of motto to say that everything in the world, everything that happens to us, everything. He got his leg nearly blown off by a cannonball, and it's a pivotal part of his story to finding God. And I get it now. I used to teach it. I used to, give talks about it, but I didn't really know it. Now I know it, that in fact, everything does work for God's greater glory and honor. And so in a maybe a little bit of a arrogant sense, but I hope it's more out of humility, I would just like to say thank you to God in a non-nice guy, feeling like I have to kind of way, but like it would be my honor to make a return gift of service for all that I've been given. So yeah, the emotions come pretty heavily the last, especially 6 months. And man, thanks, Lance. I don't know. We'll just have to figure out. Well, you can wrap it up. Thank
No.
you.
No, well, thank you, Corey, for showing up with your whole heart and modeling what it looks like to take a risk, to raise your hand, to be willing to take off the fig leaf per se. Here's a challenge if you're open. Message me back. I'm gonna say the next 30 days. When you had another one of those Superman moments, like whatever that means to you, put yourself in that place, that conversation, that, and just let me know, like, hey, Lance, I had another one of those brave moments that took up more space in the world.
That is the least I can do. It'll be my privilege.
Well,
I am
blessings
praying
to
for
you.
you, man. You are a messenger. Thank you for being a messenger.
Thank you, brother. Thank
All
you.
right.